studied our series in Jeremiah, and we've reached Jeremiah 38. Last time we looked at the first part of the chapter, and now we come to verse 14. But you need to bear in mind what happened before, because it all fits together. So hopefully you can all remember that last study. So starting to read Jeremiah chapter 38, verse 14. Then Zedekiah the king sent and had Jeremiah the prophet brought to him at the third entrance of the house of the Lord. And the king said to Jeremiah, I will ask you something, hide nothing from me. Jeremiah said to Zedekiah, if I declare it to you, will you not surely put me to death? And if I give you advice, you will not listen to me? So Zedekiah the king swore secretly to Jeremiah, saying, as the Lord lives who made our very souls, I will not put you to death, nor will I give you into the hand of these men who seek your life. Then Jeremiah said to Zedekiah, thus says the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel, if you surely surrender to the king of Babylon's princes, then your soul shall live. This city shall not be burned with fire, and you and your house shall live. But if you do not surrender to the king of Babylon's princes, then this city shall be given into the hand of the Chaldeans. They will burn it with fire, and you shall not escape from their hand. And Zedekiah the king said to Jeremiah, I am afraid of the Jews who have defected to the Chaldeans, that they deliver me into their hand and they abuse me. But Jeremiah said, they shall not deliver you. Please obey the voice of the Lord which I speak to you, so it shall be well with you, and your soul shall live. But if you refuse to surrender, this is the word that the Lord has shown me. Now behold, all the women who are left in the king of Judah's house shall be surrendered to the king of Babylon's princes. And those women shall say, your close friends have set upon you and prevailed against you, and your feet have sunk in the mire, and they have turned away again. So they shall surrender all your wives and children to the Chaldeans. You shall not escape from their hand, but shall be taken by the hand of the king of Babylon. And you shall cause this city to be burned with fire. Then Zedekiah said to Jeremiah, let no one know of these words, and you shall not die. But if the princes hear that I have talked with you, they shall come to you and say to you, declare to us now what you have said to the king, and also what the king said to you. Do not hide it from us, and we will not put you to death. Then you shall say to them, I presented my request before the king, that he would not make me return to Jonathan's house to die there. Then all the princes came to Jeremiah and asked him, and he told them according to all these words that the king had commanded. So they stopped speaking with him, for the conversation had not been heard. Now Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison until the day that Jerusalem was taken, and he was there when Jerusalem was taken. Now, what can we make of this passage? Now, as you remember last time, we heard how Jeremiah was thrown into the pit and only to be rescued later by Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian. Now, who threw Jeremiah in that pit? And why was he in there? It was the princes threw him in there because they didn't like his message. Now, remember that as we get further on, because this passage here, this is the final meeting between the prophet Jeremiah and King Zedekiah. What's happening at this point? The Babylonian armies, they're already gathered outside the city. The destruction of the city is already in sight. It's only a matter of time before the city is taken. And this is the very thing Jeremiah has been saying constantly, it's going to happen. It was his message. The city will be taken by the Babylonians. And the people didn't like that message. But at this point, it seems the king might actually be going to listen. But it doesn't work out. Because what we have to do today is studying contrasts. We have Zedekiah and we have Jeremiah. What do we know about Zedekiah? We know a few things. But one thing which comes across very clearly in this passage is how incredibly weak he is. He's never capable of making up his mind. He's always found agreeing with whoever the last person he spoke to said. The last chapter, he's agreeing they can throw Jeremiah in the pit. But this chapter, he's seeking out Jeremiah to go and talk to him. He's swinging between opinions constantly and trying to keep everybody on board. He's trying to satisfy all different competing interests. It seems almost as though his court officials have more sway with him than anybody else. He doesn't listen and act on what he said. But the next moment, he's changing his mind and says something entirely different. So you can never be sure what he's going to be doing at any given moment. When we first come across Zedekiah, beginning of chapter 37, what we're told? We're told that neither the king, his servants, nor the people of the land listened to the words of the Lord that were spoken through Jeremiah the prophet. So Zedekiah didn't want to listen to what the Lord said, and yet he's not prepared to entirely give it up either, because he now wants to meet Jeremiah. That's not the first time either. Because earlier on, chapter 37, we find he sent Shelemiah and Zephaniah, the son of the priest, to Jeremiah, saying, pray for me, pray for the nation. And yet he's not listening. And indeed, those same officials that were sent to Jeremiah were the ones earlier on in this chapter who were throwing Jeremiah in the pit. Because he was accused of actively discouraging the people, telling them that they should be defected to the Babylonians. What did the king say at that point? He said, Jeremiah is in your hands, for the king can do nothing against you, the princes of the people. So it seems these princes have more power than the king sees sometimes. So Jeremiah is thrown into the system, he sinks down into the mud. And verse 5 of chapter 37, Zedekiah is there agreeing with this plan. But by verse 7, two verses later, he's agreeing with Ebed-Melech to pull Jeremiah out of it so that he won't die. And that brings us to this point where the king is now actively seeking out Jeremiah. But, of course, it can't be a public meeting, because the court officials are going to see it, and everyone's going to want to know what's happening. So he meets Jeremiah in this secret meeting. He goes to the house of the Lord. He won't bring him to the palace, he won't go to the prison to see Jeremiah, so he agrees to this neutral location. And what does Zedekiah want to know? Well, he wants to know how the siege of Jerusalem is going to end. And he begs Jeremiah to speak to him truthfully, without hiding anything from him. Now, this sounds promising until you realise Jeremiah has been ceaselessly telling him how the siege is going to end. He's been telling him right from the start they need to defect, they need to surrender to the Babylonians. So what does Zedekiah expect? I mean, in a way, he reminds us here of Balaam, doesn't he? Constantly seeking a new message, constantly expecting that the Lord is going to change his mind and do something different. But the message can't change. So, Jeremiah, it seems, is reluctant to speak to the king, and you can understand why. The king was agreeing earlier to throw him into the pit, agreeing to have him killed off. But now he's asking Jeremiah for a message. Why would Jeremiah trust him? Well, he doesn't. What does he say? If I declare this to you, will you not surely put me to death? And if I give you advice, you're not going to listen to me, are you? So it isn't until that Zedekiah promises Jeremiah nothing bad is going to happen to him that Jeremiah agrees to tell the king what he wants to know. But notice what's missing. There's still no promise from the king. He just didn't listen to what Jeremiah said, and that's it. And Jeremiah knows this message is not going to be one the king wants to hear. But Jeremiah tells him again how the situation will unfold. Jeremiah starts with, "Thus says the Lord, the God of hosts, the God of Israel." He's reminding Zedekiah he's not speaking on his own authority. This isn't simply human wisdom he's hearing. Jeremiah's message comes with authority. He can speak with complete confidence about these events, even though there's still future. And Jeremiah says again, the king must surrender to the Babylonians. And he tells them, if he surrenders, he will live. Zedekiah must surrender to the generals of the Babylonian army. And if he doesn't, well, that's when Jeremiah lists all the bad things that are going to happen. I mean, whether Zedekiah surrenders or not, the city will still fall. But if the Babylonian army has to come in and take it by force, they're going to burn the city, and Zedekiah is not going to end well for him. But what's Zedekiah's role here? Zedekiah is the king. It should be the role of the king to seek the welfare of his people, to seek the least painful option here. And Zedekiah knows if he surrenders, the people will survive. He knows the city will not be burned. But Zedekiah is too scared of what other people think to do that. He doesn't see where the real danger is here. He's concerned about his own position. As he said, he's scared of the Israelites who have already defected to the king of Babylon. He's more worried about them than he is about disobeying what the Lord has said to him. I mean, Zedekiah was told, verse 16, he won't be handed over to the people. But he pretends at least not to believe it, or he actually doesn't believe it. And he makes it a reason for not doing as he's been told. In verses 20 and 21, Jeremiah reassures them again, they shall not deliver you. Please obey the voice of the Lord which I speak to you. It shall be well with you, your soul shall live. But Zedekiah refuses. Even though he knows surrendering would be better for both him and for the people under his care. It seems Zedekiah is afraid of losing his place of honour. He wants to hold on to it to the last possible second. He thinks if he does the right thing and surrenders himself to the Babylonians, that he will lose all respect. He knows if he continues to stretch out this siege, the city will still be lost, and even the women of the court will mock him, we're told, verse 22. Now these verses, these words, verse 22, it must contain a hint of irony for Jeremiah. What's he told? Well, Zedekiah is told, these women will mock you, they will say, your close friends have sinned upon you and prevailed against you. Your feet have sunk in the mire and they've turned away from you again. Now what's Jeremiah thinking here? He's thinking he's never missed it if he pulled out the mire. His feet were sunk in the physical mire. And now what Zedekiah is doing, he's enmeshing himself in this metaphorical mire. His attempts to please everybody will only lead to further entanglement. For all his political manoeuvring, he's still going to end up being abandoned by everybody and left in a political mess of his own creation. I mean, if only Zedekiah had recalled an earlier king of Israel, one of his own ancestors. I mean, this situation, it sounds an awful lot like Psalm 40, doesn't it? We turn there for a moment, Psalm 40, we read... Find it. I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined to me and heard my cry. He also brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and establish my steps. He has put a new song in my mouth, praise to our God. Many will see it and fear and trust in the Lord. Now, of course, that's the hymn we opened with, of course, but even in his darkest days, David knew where his trust was to be found. Even when he was sinking in the mire, he knew where he should place his confidence. But Zedekiah's self-centeredness will not let him do that. And he's going to go on, he's going to lose not just the kingdom, not just these serving women, these court ladies who are going to mock him, but his own wives and children are going to be brought out to the Babylonians as well. He will see them handed over to the Babylonian army. And as we know from the next chapter, Zedekiah gets to see his own sons killed before his eyes. And all this could have been so easily avoided if he'd listened to the voice of the prophet. Now, Jeremiah ends his speech with a final reminder that the actions of the king will lead to the city being burnt with fire. But even this fails to move Zedekiah at all. He ends the conversation without even bothering to reply to anything Jeremiah said to him. All Zedekiah does is tell Jeremiah not to tell anyone that he spoke to him, or not to tell anyone what was said. He's too scared again of his court officials and what they might think. So Jeremiah must keep this conversation strictly between themselves. And if the princes happen to ask Jeremiah what was said, the king's very careful here. He instructs Jeremiah what to say. That he presented his request before the king, that he would not make him return to Jonathan's house to die there. Now, this could be a bit puzzling for Jeremiah, couldn't it? Because Jeremiah has been told to tell the court officials that the meeting was about one thing, when he actually spoke to the king about something entirely different. And as we read on in that section, we find that's exactly what happened. They came to Jeremiah, they asked him what he said, and Jeremiah answered them as the king directed him. So did Jeremiah lie? Or was his answer justified? Well, it seems that Jeremiah's answer was at least was probably truthful. I mean, it's likely that because he came up in the conversation. I mean, being thrown in the pit is a stick in your memory, isn't it? So it's likely he raised it with the king. So Jeremiah probably did discuss that, but that wasn't the main point of the discussion. So Jeremiah didn't tell them everything that he could have said. So was Jeremiah justified in what he did? Well, but you could say, we could argue, probably it was justified. After all, this is the king speaking to Jeremiah, the one to whom he owed earthly allegiance, and had been told to answer in that way. And not all discussions between the king and his counsellors are for everyone to know about. But there is a second reason here as well, isn't he? The king promised Jeremiah that if he answered in that way, he would protect him and he would not die. Now consider who's asking Jeremiah about the discussion. It's the princes. These are the same people that just chucked Jeremiah in the pit. And they tried to kill him. Now they come to him again, what do they say? Tell us what we want to know or we're going to kill you. That's not going to inspire Jeremiah to answer them, really, is it? Jeremiah has no reason to trust them, and he doesn't owe them any allegiance. They're not the ones in authority over him. And if he revealed what he'd been speaking to the king about, it's likely he would have tried to kill him anyway. That's fairly implied in the words the king spoke to him in verse 24. So, with no instruction from the Lord to reveal the full nature of the discussion, and no valid reason for sharing this private conversation, it seems the actions of Jeremiah are appropriate to the situation. In any case, the court officials leave Jeremiah alone, having got nothing useful out of him. And we're told that Jeremiah stayed where he was in the court of the prison until Jerusalem fell. Well, that's the story, but what can we draw from this? Well, it recounts a difficult time in the life of Judah, doesn't it? Lots of people have already deserted to the Babylonians. The city is under siege, food is running low. And while we don't live in a situation exactly like that, there are some parallels. We're all faced with challenging circumstances, particularly at the moment for many of us. Often we can't see our way forward. And there are plenty of times that we can have competing interests, competing groups demanding our allegiance. In this passage we have two people set before us, both with the same information, and they both knew how they should respond. And they responded very differently. We have Zedekiah, alone and isolated, a puppet king, now being forced out of power by the very nation that placed him there. Zedekiah knew what he should do, and he certainly wasn't unfamiliar with the Lord and with the words that had been spoken. He would certainly have heard previous prophecies brought by the previous kings, and the words of Jeremiah have been reported to Zedekiah directly. We know that from the previous chapter. And now Zedekiah has come to Jeremiah himself. Yet despite all that, Zedekiah turns his back on the word of the Lord and seeks to find his own way out of the mess. He chooses to reject the only one who can deliver him. Rather than standing on the rock of truth, he sinks into the mire of his own folly. Contrast that with Jeremiah. Jeremiah knows the truth. He knew what God had said, and he knew what he'd been told to do. Jeremiah has shown throughout his ministry he's not afraid to proclaim the truth, even though it was continually putting his own life in danger. I mean, think how much easier Jeremiah's life would have been if he would have kept quiet about some of the things God had said to him. I mean, it must have been very tempting, just trim the message a little bit here or there, make it more palatable to the officials. Maybe you just don't proclaim it so loudly around the palace, or in the hearing of some of the court officials. But Jeremiah couldn't do that, yet he remained faithful to what God had told him to do. So what made the difference? Why did these people respond differently? Why is it that Jeremiah was steadfast, while Zedekiah vacillates all over the place? Ultimately, it comes down to authority. Who do they believe has the ultimate authority? Oh well, Zedekiah seems to have seen himself as the ultimate authority. And he had to maintain his power at all costs. So he's constantly balancing the interests of different groups around him. Giving into this group, then that group, rushing to the officials, to Jeremiah. But ultimately, everything is to shore up his own position. And trying to find the best possible outcome for himself. Whereas Jeremiah viewed himself as a servant of a greater authority. Jeremiah was a servant of the one who's able to order all these events according to his will. Even when faced with temporary difficulty and suffering, Jeremiah can retain his confidence in God, because God is the one who ultimately promised to deliver his people. God has promised them that the city will fall, but he's also promised them better days are coming. He will restore the city. Now, we too face challenges. Some of them are common to all of us, and some of them are going to be very specific. Now, I don't know the challenges each and every one of you are facing at the moment. But the question is the same. Where is our authority? Who has the greatest authority in this situation? Are we trying to work things out on our own? Are we looking to the government? Ultimately, our authority is in God. And he is the one who has promised us that he is working out all these things according to his will. And he is the one who can pull us out of all this mire, out of the mess, and he can place our feet on the rock. Even when all around are stumbling, where they're falling into the mire, God will place our feet on the rock. We stand on the rock of truth. So we shouldn't be trying to write these things on our own. See, this meeting here between Jeremiah and Zedekiah This was the last recorded meeting between Jeremiah and Zedekiah. What happens in the very next chapter? The city falls, and we find Zedekiah finally attempting to give up and flee the city, but only this time to be captured by the king of Babylon, or by the king's forces, and taken to the king of Babylon. So we can't afford to keep trying to work things out on our own. The situation only gets worse and worse. We must look to our ultimate authority. We must trust in Jeremiah's God and look to him to guide us. Now, of course, we're looking back on the cross, and we know that the rock is Christ and what he has done for us. So we are called to trust in him, to look to what Christ has done for us, and to trust him to guide us today and throughout our lives as God works out his purpose is in us. And where we leave, I would carry on, but someone else is going to take on the next chapter, so we'll leave it there.